This is why we love racing in all its forms.
And it's Lachlan Varaat's Pride's Easy Feed Victoria Cup.
Brodsky beat clear. All Outfit wins the Sandown Cup.
Twilight Pavement. What a ride. What a win in a cup we'll never forget.
For the next hour, RSN is cracking the codes.
Oh, and I'm looking forward to this hour because it's an hour I haven't had for a few weeks, and I'm looking forward to catching up with me mates Simone and Dan. How are you guys?
Yeah, good morning.
Welcome back.
Yeah, yes, welcome back, Matt.
Welcome back to
it's
my
been
world.
Been how you been? Indeed.
How you been?
Yeah, we've worked a little bit harder. Sore shoulders, Simone, haven't we? We've had to carry a bit of an extra load over the last 3 or 4 weeks, but nonetheless, I'm sure we're better for it, but it's great to have you back.
I tuned into a few. Sugar.
Did you? Did you?
The story of Sugar was, there was bits in that I didn't realise, Dan, about Sugar.
Yes, it was. I was fascinated. It's a story that's been around for 40 years, Matt, and I felt that I learned a little bit more
about... This was last week's show, by the way.
Last week's show about Sugar, the horse that was kidnapped by the IRA at gunpoint, and they had a mishap, and from what we understand in our story last week, the horse was shot and killed as a result of him breaking his leg. It was quite extraordinary. At the time, he was the most sought-after thoroughbred racehorse in the world, only served one season at stud. He did produce one very good horse that came to Australia and won two Group 1 races, a horse called Orthal, who ran third in a Caulfield Cup, won an Underwood and Queen Elizabeth.
Indeed. When I was listening to that last week, I was thinking to myself, having been to a lot of roll-ups at roll calls at stables, Peter Moody, Burren Road, Black Caviar, and others, I'm not saying security is lax at racing stables, but there's such an assumption of goodwill, and which is fair enough, that I reckon I could walk into most racing stables with a head collar and put it on a horse and walk out and no one would be any the wiser. So it was fascinating to, you know, they were sometimes worth $20 million, but all you have to do is walk through the gate sometimes. So fascinating stuff. Hey, I had a really lovely road trip whilst away. And it's inspired me. Something that I saw on Sky 2 last week has inspired me to do another road trip. I was just watching the races last weekend, Simone, and I flicked across to Sky 2, and they showed this race meeting. I thought, where the hell is this? There was all this desert scrub in the background and a river running through it and all that sort of stuff, and these fans, you know, in board shorts and so on. Turns out it was at Adelaide River. Do you know where Adelaide River is?
I've never heard of Adelaide River, so you must tell us.
It's full of crocodiles, it is, and it's between Katherine and Darwin, and it's about an hour south of Darwin. They have an annual race meeting every year, and I wrote a bit of a yarn on it and did a bit of social media on it. It's amazing how quickly people latched onto this idea of a racing road trip because of COVID, because we can't go anywhere, and everyone's now thinking, what can we do internally? And there's racetracks everywhere and racing festivals all the time, and amazing how many people are now planning to go to Adelaide River races next year and with all these other ones with Katherine and to see the Katherine Gorge and things like that. So, I think this is a really exciting time for racing in those small carnivals around Australia to get a bit of tourism attachment going, because when I drove up to Alice Springs a couple of weeks ago, Dan, there was a lot of people on the road. Everyone is now doing the Australia thing. And given that race meetings are everywhere, it might be an interesting little thing for tourism and racing to get onto.
Well, the movie that won the best picture this year, although I don't know how the hell it did, but Nomadland and a lot of the nomads, you know, stripping away their normal life, living out of a home and then travelling the countryside, as this movie in particular was based in America, that may well be the in thing
Frances
over
McDormand
here as well.
Was in that, wasn't she?
Yeah, great actress. I don't know how it won the best. It was a reasonable movie, but it's based on a lot of... well, obviously a lot of truth, but a way of life now for people, in a sense, whether they're abandoning their homes but getting the big RVs or the caravans and living out of their caravan. And if you're going to do that, I mean, surely you'd want to be a racing person, wouldn't you, and just go to racetrack all across Australia. By golly, that'd be unbelievable.
I reckon it would be. So we are going to do the Adelaide River one next year. So any listeners who want to become part of the crew, we've got a gang of four at the moment who are committed. It's going to end up on the Gibb River Road, and we're going to end up at Broome. So that's the plan for this time next year. I tell you, Simone, somewhere where there should be a caravan road trip is to Eagle Farm for an annual trip to the Stradbroke Handicap, I reckon, because you're more of a greyhound girl, and I did a lot of Googling on the Stradbroke, and you've been dazzled by the winners list of the Stradbroke and some of the interestingly named winners.
There are some very interesting names, and when I was texting them to you, Matt, my spell check was going crazy. It just kept reverting back to something that wasn't the horses' names. But there was one back in 1890. The first one that won was Pyrus, so that was a sort of a strange name. There's one called Del Nair. A filly called Wiggle in 1958.
Champion, so, Dan. Wiggle.
Right. Yes. I'm looking, Sir Wisp. That was, okay. And Duckatoon, another strange name. But it was disqualified, and a horse called Bemboki Yacht took the honours in that particular race, and that was back in 1980. And since then, there's been Daybreak Lover, who won it in two years, 1984 and 1986, and Campaign King. So the names became a little bit more normal as the race evolved, I think. But back in the day, there was some strange names. And I know sometimes it's coming from the dam and the sire and put together, but sometimes I think these names can be very, very random.
Well, we're going to have a guest on this morning who's an old mate of mine, and his name's Bart Sinclair, and he was for many, many years the racing editor of the Courier Mail. And I rang him up during the week to say, can you come on Cracking the Codes this morning on the morning of the Stradbroke Handicap and talk to us about your memories of the Stradbroke? And they do go back to some of those names you referred to. He said, you do realise that my old man trained the winner in 1963 when I was 13 years old.
And what did you say to that?
And I said, of course I knew that, Bart. I'm a very good researcher. Of course I knew that. So once I picked myself up off the floor in learning that, I asked Bart if he would come on and join us this morning on Cracking the Codes. And he's going to do that a little bit later on. And I think the good starting point is to talk about his old man's horse, Mulala, who won in 63. And then Bart can take us through some amazing memories of the most famous sprint race run in Queensland, and probably the most famous race run in Queensland, and probably one of the four or five most famous sprint races run anywhere in Australia, Dan.
No doubt. I'd say, well, I think without doubt, Queensland's most famous race. And I think from anyone outside of Queensland, they would certainly say that. And certainly our biggest 1,400-metre race. I mean, some races, prize money and pop-up races have overtaken maybe those traditional races. But when we were growing up, I think the races that 1,200 was a Newmarket, 1,400 a Stradbroke, 1,600 a Doncaster, then naturally you had your Caulfield and Melbourne Cups. From a handicap point of view, obviously the Cox Plate always stood out. But those three races, the Newmarket, the Stradbroke and the Doncaster, to me they were the big three.
Well, in 2013 it was the greatest race ever for me. I'll tell you this story, and then we'll touch on what we're going to be talking about with the greyhounds. And Dan, you've got some replays. It's a big night in harness tonight, and there's some great historic reference points there as well. And then we will get Bart Sinclair. But this is my story, Simone. And it's a true story, and I've written about it for Winning Post this week, right? So go back to 2013, and it's about 5 o'clock on the day of the Stradbroke Handicap, and a horse called Linton had just won the Stradbroke. And I'd done the RSN trainer interviews that morning, but sort of vagued out on a few of them, as you do when you look out the window. And Mick Kent rang me up, the horse trainer, and said, what's your favourite beer? And I said, I don't know. Why? What does it matter? And he said, don't you remember the interview you had with Sadler this morning? And I said, I remember interviewing him, but what are you talking about? And he said, he told you that if the horse won, he would give you a lifetime supply of beer. And I said, how could I not have heard that? But I didn't hear it. Went back over the tape, and sure enough, anyway, 2 days passes, and John Sadler was in training partnership at the time with Troy Corson's at Malua Racing at Flemington. Troy rings me up 2 days later, Dan. What's the actual address of RSN? And I said, oh, blah, 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 the address. He said, can a truck back up to that address? And I said, what the hell's he on about? Then I thought, oh, is this reference to that beer thing? I said, I don't know, but I'm giving it a try. Anyway, half an hour later, the secretary at RSN, the receptionist, rang up and said, oh, Matt, there's a bloke here. He needs you to sign for something. I think it's got something to do with beer. Went down there, and by this stage I had an army of recruits who had got wind of this, you know, the Ben Days of this world and the Riley Phelans and all these people. Actually, it may not have been Ben Day. Anyway, so cruel people. There were 50 slabs of beer in this truck. Half were Bogues and half were Corona. got him up to the kitchenette. You know where the couch near the kitchenette is here up here? It was stacked to head height with these slabs. All the vultures got most of them, but I got something like about 20 slabs into the boot of my car, and I cleared the way in the back garage at home, the back tin shed. And for about the next 8 weeks, it became a grab and go for all these people around Cheltenham to just walk past. I didn't even know half of them. They'd just go, oh, is this the beer house? And they'd go and grab a slab and whack it over their shoulder and nick off. And within about 6 weeks, the lifetime supply of beer had completely disappeared.
And this is the John Sadler we had on a couple of weeks ago on the show. Yeah, he didn't tell us that story
No. But I had a go at him about 6 weeks later and said, mate, you told me you were giving me a lifetime supply of beer and it's all run out. And he said, I'll get onto it. That's a disgrace. But the shed's still empty, so he never did. So that's so my Stradbroke story.
He did honour his vet with alcohol, unlike other people that may be on this panel that doesn't include
Simone. That was an unnecessary segue, wasn't it?
A few red wines outstanding somewhere, isn't
Moving along. It's Straddy Day on Cracking the Codes. Hey, Dan, Simone, just give us a little insight into who we're going to have our tattoo today. And then, Dan, we've got some lovely little memory lane replays in the harness world today as well.
Can I just backtrack to last week very quickly? Our guest last week, we had Marg Long on, Matt, and unfortunately you missed it because it was a great interview about the legendary Ned Bryant, who was a greyhound trainer and checker, and I've never, ever heard a bad word spoken about him, and neither has anyone else. Anyway, someone at RSN went and sent Dan a message in the morning saying it was a great interview and well done, and I put a tweet out, and it just sort of got some momentum, and people were just telling their stories about lining up and waiting for their greyhounds to be checked by Ned. And then Ned's son, Michael Bryant, actually contacted me as well via Twitter, and we've been in contact, so hopefully he can come on the show next week. But he was Black Caviar's muscle manipulator. And I think, what a small world. This was an interview last week that I was struggling to find, and it was just trying to go through some articles and Facebook feeds to see what can I come up with, and all of a sudden I came up with the Ned Bryant story, a man I'd never met. But it's really lovely to receive that positive feedback, and then when family members actually engage, and you've done it at justice on a very short segment on a radio program, I think it was great. It was really, really nice to hear that. But this week we are taking somewhat of a trip down memory lane. We have a guest called Chris Hislop, who is He's not really involved in greyhound racing anymore, but he's somewhat of an historian, and he runs a Facebook page called Greyhound Racing Australia History and Images. And when I hooked onto this page not that long ago, I was quite surprised by the content on it.
Monkeys on greyhounds?
there may be one or two.
First thing
there
I thought of when you said historian, I thought monkeys.
Monkeys. There may be something there, but he's for someone that's not directly involved with racing anymore, he'll tell his story when he comes on. He spends countless hours just uploading these images and putting videos onto DVDs or USBs that he can actually upload now, and just some of the greyhounds, I think, my goodness, I remember that dog, I was there that night, and they're things that they might not be the out and out champions, but they still bring back those memories of that night. So Chris is going to join us and tell us about the process, and his dabble in greyhound racing, also bred a couple of thoroughbreds as well. So I think he'll be a great chat this morning. So looking forward to hearing what he's got to say a little bit later on.
And I'm going to ask him my standard dumb question.
It about stupid questions with you this week?
talk about never, you should never write an article where it can turn on you. You know how, Dan, they used to talk about the old Australian colonial bred horse with the big boof head and the dinner plate feet and, you know, the hardy horse that we had before the internationalisation of our bloodlines, and now they're all finely small-hooved, you know, all these sort of things. Has the greyhound, you know how we're tapping into different bloodlines with greyhounds as well, Simone? Would the standard-looking greyhound of 1900 look the same as the standard-looking greyhound of 2021?
I don't think so. I look at photos of old paintings.
Maybe it's not a dumb question.
No, particularly like the Irish-bred greyhounds, and they're really deep-chested and a big version of a greyhound. And I think now, you know, we can have greyhounds racing around at 25 kilos, 26 kilos. So definitely the breeding has changed. And it's interesting you raise that point, Matt, because we are going to have a replay in the interview with Chris of a marathon race. Now, we don't have marathons anymore in racing. It was back in, oh, I've got the date, 2005. We had the last marathon. So
greyhounds aren't even bred. What would the marathon have been over?
At Sandown, it was 956 metres. There was one at Warrigal, it was just over 1,000 metres.
Wow.
But now we're struggling to get a good batch of greyhounds to run over 700, but we really want the sprinters over the 500. But there's so many short course dogs that can't run a lot further than 450 metres. So it's really interesting how the breeding, and I think perhaps that comes down to a lot of what you've just mentioned, is that the size and the stature and the genetics of the greyhounds have changed, much like the horses, so the racing has definitely changed.
Exactly. We can't breed a decent stayer in this country in the greyhound or gallops codes, Dan, by the sound of things.
Oh, we better not go that far.
Well, we can't in the gallops. There's no doubt about that. Zaki,
well, even Zaki's in the trots, you look at the staying races, and although Western Australia still have quite a few, here in Victoria, there's very few of them. Kilmore Cup still listed as what I would consider a staying race, and the Hunter Cup. But apart from that, they're few and far between. Whereas back in the day, it would common to have races at beyond 2,400 metres, and
even
particularly
38,
for trotters.
Was 38.70 a distance, I recall, and...
Well, over 3,000 metres. Yeah, Inter Dominion Grand Finals at Moonee Valley were over 3,000, a bit over 3,000 metres for both the paces, and particularly the trotters. But that it has been eked out of the, certainly the harness racing, and I think that comes down to the time constraints. If you look at, a Sky Channel, for example, a harness race is going to take longer to run on average, not always, but on average, than certainly the other two codes. And as a result of that, there's been a push to restrict the length of those races, and that's why you'll find a lot now of what we consider the middle distance, which is 2,000 to 22 or under, and then the sprint race is generally over a mile. And even the introduction, we've had 1,000 and 1,200 metre races.
I've seen them. They're being run in New South Wales, aren't they?
Queensland at the moment, but we've had them in Victoria. There's been a series. And look, sometimes they're okay, but unless there's something that wants to go forward, put a bit of pressure on, they can also be pretty boring as well. New Zealand still traditionally, and they have in both codes, still have now and always have had the better stayers. From an Australasian point of view, in the thoroughbreds and in the harness, I don't think there can be any argument there that the best stayers have certainly been from New Zealand year after year for decades.
Absolutely, they have. We're going to take a break shortly and then come back with my old mate Bart Sinclair to talk about his family connection to the Stradbroke Handicap. But Dan, let's just spend a little bit of time on reflecting on what's coming up at Tabcorp Park Melton tonight. And these races, as soon as I saw Italian Cup, I thought Popular Arm.
Who was the Farlap?
Popular Arm comeback race, and I think it was about 1984. And there's the La Cucaracha as well. So some significant history playing out tonight.
There is, and it's hard for anyone. I say our vintage, but surely the stories have been passed down. The Italian Cup that most people I know think of, that incredible race in 1984. I remember being there, and I was a teenager. How old would I have been at that stage? About 15 I would have been. And it was unbelievable. I remember the crowd going off. Poppy had come back from injury. He'd had the pins put in his legs. It was thought he would never race again. He would come back. This is 1984, and there was a lot of top horses engaged in this race. Let's relive this magic night, the comeback of Popular Arm in the Italian Cup of 1984.
But with 600 to go, Knight lets Poppy go, and he's dead 15 metres in front. The old champ's raced away. The pins are standing up to it. He's got a big lead. Second now, Black Armbro, followed by Round the Outside once more. Gamelite's going to run nearly last, and Royal Three's doing nothing. But Popular Arm's gone further ahead. 2.50 to go on the corner. He's 20 metres in front of Black Armbro. Once more in third place, and there followed by Bart's Gamble. Into the straight, Popular Arm 12 in front. His condition might be starting to give out a bit. He's still got a big lead from Black Armbro, and once more, and Popular Arm's going to be untroubled. Welcome back, Poppy. You've done it again. Bart's Gamble gets up on the rails to run second.
I remember that race call from Bill Collins. Welcome back, Popular Arm. You've done it again. And is he getting a bit tired? That is imprinted in my brain as Kingston Town can't win. That's how big. Simona, did you hear the crowd?
Mm.
It was like a U2 concert.
Yeah, it was.
Yes.
Absolutely, it was. It still sends shivers up my spine just listening to that. Wow, what a horse! What a night that was,
Vinny.
The Italian Cup, yeah, that's right. It just had it all, and it was a top field. It was worthy of being a Group 1 race when you listen to some of the other horses that were engaged, and Poppy hadn't raced for so long, and it was quite remarkable. Italian Cup is on tonight at Melton with a good field, good even field as well. And the other feature on the card is the La Cucaracha free-for-all. La Cucaracha, a champion trotting mare from around 2000-2001, she was by a pacing side called Safely Kept, and she was just about unbeatable. Had 36 starts for 23 wins. This race has only been run a couple of times in Victoria. Last year it wasn't run because of the COVID and there were no group racing through the winter. But in 2019, the horse that won this race was the daughter of La Cucaracha, which in itself is quite extraordinary. And her daughter, Dance Craze, has now won 24 races and surpassed the amount of wins La Cucaracha had and also the prize money that La Cucaracha was able to get to. This is Dance Craze winning the La Cucaracha, her mum's race, in 2019.
29-1 the back straight quarter. Amorta Fred led, still in cruise control. On its back, Destiny Jenny Lou peeling out. Now Dance Craze is closing in on them. The Gabby Dam team, 1-2-3 in the La Cucaracha. And going back to the inside, Dance Craze to sneak the Garrard sprint lane. Amorta Fred grabbed by Destiny Jenny Lou. Dance Craze late on the scene on the Garrard sprint lane, taking the lead, Destiny Jenny Lou. But Dance Craze reeling her in. Destiny Jenny Lou, Dance Craze, they'll hit it together. Dance Craze, I reckon the inside's won it narrowly in a photo finish. We'll wait for the judge.
Well, there you go. Like mother, like daughter. Just like you and Darcy, Simone.
Yes.
Is that still volatile, that relationship? Has anything improved in the last few weeks?
At times it can be very volatile. But, it's just one of those things. Hopefully we don't butt heads when she's a teenager. But
oh, yeah, that's not going to happen. Hey, did you notice what I noticed when Dan threw to that? He said dance instead of dance.
Dance.
Are you dance or dance?
I'm a dance.
I'm a dance, too. See, Simone and I are Australians, Dan.
I'd like to.
Well,
I'd like
France.
To be saying
it's just the way I got taught, I suppose. Yeah.
I think it is just the way you get taught. But I did get pulled up many years ago when I was hosting on Sky Racing, and I said Newcastle. And one of the producers said, it is not Newcastle, it is Newcastle.
I say Newcastle. So, do you say Newcastle,
yeah,
Dan? Or?
Well, it depends. With a town or a city, you go on what the locals call it. I think it's fair enough because there are Newcastles and Newcastles across the world.
Albany, Albany?
Yeah. No, it's Albany, isn't it?
It is Albany, but I've called it Albany, and the Albanesians have got upset.
Well, the classic one that most people get wrong is Launceston.
Yeah.
People call it Launceston.
Yeah, no, I got a clip for that last year too.
and Melbourne, because they think of the Bourne identity and it's not just Melbourne, Cranbourne.
And when New South Wales people, I remember a couple came down to work for .com, no knock on them because these towns you have to know. I remember, might have been BZ or someone called Moe Mo, and just names like that because you haven't spoken them before. Oh, anyway, Bart Sinclair is a very eloquent man. He doesn't mispronounce anything, and we're going to get Barty on. It's Stradbroke Day. And Dan, as you said earlier, this is an excitement day. It's like when they move behind the gates for the Doncaster. It's like you think this is a big event. This is big. There's a big field. This is the winner's going to be a good story. Bart's going to tell us about so many of the stories, including the year that his old man trained the winner of the most famous race in Queensland. So we're going to hear all about that when the great Bart Sinclair joins us after this break on Cracking the Codes.
Loving their racing, pacing and chasing. Matt Stewart, Dan Malicki and Simone Fisher. Cracking the Codes.
We are Cracking the Codes and it is a straddy morning. And sadly, our archives didn't go back to 1963 because it would have been great to have Malala as a replay. We've got plenty more we can play. I think we've got a campaign king up our sleeve and a show of heart. But Malala was trained by the father of my great mate Bart Sinclair, the former Courier Mail racing editor, who joins us to talk about his love affair and everyone's love affair with this most famous sprint race. Barty, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great, Matt. Good morning to Dan and Simone as well.
We haven't got a replay of Malala.
Oh, sadly. Great memories.
Tell us, before we talk about the family connection to Malala, take us through the win of Malala. We don't have a replay. What sort of a win was Malala in the Stradbroke?
It was superbly ridden by Darby McCarthy, who unfortunately passed away in the recent months. It was the first of three Stradbroke wins for Darby in 4 years. is a get-back horse. He had a lot of leg issues. He actually had his last gallop down at Crib Island Beach, which is now, it was a shanty town just near the Brisbane airport. It's been taken over by the airport now, so the horses work at Nudgee Beach. But he had his last gallop Thursday afternoon because you had to work with the tides. And so it was a good training performance by my father, obviously, and everything just sort of came together. But he was a very good horse. He was a Caulfield 1,200-metre record holder for a while, and he just had leg problems, but he had a lot of good wins.
You were 13 years old at the time when your dad was training Stradbroke winners?
Yeah, I was up the top of the member stand where the public could go, open air, and I came down that ramp doing about 11 to the furlong. And, I had a small investment on the horse, and I had the double going with Sometime in the Cup. Billy Pyers rode it. It went over the line with its head on its chest fourth, beaten about a half length, never got out. I think he won the Caulfield Cup later that year. Never forgave Billy Pyers.
13-year-old with a hard luck story already. You were destined to be in thoroughbred racing then, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I grew up with stables next door, just off Racecourse Road, which runs up to Eagle Farm. So it's sort of my spiritual home, Eagle Farm. And the Stradbroke is the race every Queenslander wants to win. It's our premier event. It started in 1890, so it's got great history. I love that it's a handicap event, so the betting is usually fantastic. And if you look through the recent records, the last 30 years, there's not been many favourites win. And I think Trekking started $7 favourite. Shows you how the wide the betting usually is in a Stradbroke. And again, this year, there's no dominant horse in the market.
And of course, you were named after your dad. For listeners wondering who was Bart's dad, Bart's dad was Bart. So the other Bart, the other great Bart. So, Barty, just looking through the history of the race, it has eras, doesn't it? Like every great race, there are big eras where there was probably a decade or so where there were just amazing winners of the race. And a lot of the names are not probably that familiar to a lot of us from the past, even back to the Wiggles and so on. But I reckon the 80s and 90s was one of those, you know, that Rough Habit Campaign King type era. If I look back, that was probably the era I think most about when I think about the Stradbroke.
Well, you've tabbed two great horses there. They carried weight and won. You know, Rough Habit in 1992. It's a wonderful memory of this horse with 58.5 kilos. He started from barrier 18. He was back near last at the home turn, and he just weaved his way through close to the inside. And Jim Cassidy said, you know, I was just hanging on. The horse sort of took off. That was an amazing win. The Campaign King, you know, he was a very good horse. He won the 10,000, which was run before the Stradbroke that year. And, you know, he carried 58.5 in the Stradbroke. He probably was in all right, but he beat two very good horses, Rancho Ruler and Planet Ruler, both with no weight on their back. So, yeah, you have to have great admiration for what Bart Cummings did with Campaign King to win a Stradbroke with 58.5. And if you look through the recent records, there's not many carry big weights and win the Stradbroke anymore. You go back to Show of Heart, carried 56, and then you go back to Rough Habit and then Campaign King. But more recently, it's the horses in that sort of 52 to 54, 55 range that have been successful in the Stradbroke. So bear that in mind when you're making up your mind what you think will win this year.
All right. Hey, we've got replays of both those horses you just mentioned. We might even, I'm just doing a metaphor, a sort of an imaginary toss of the coin. I've come up with Show of Heart. Craigie, let's have a quick listen to Show of Heart and then we'll continue.
King Lotto led past the 400 from Princess Clang. Fuadi on the outside. Libidinius, Kingsgate, Corral Boy. Perno was pulled to the outside and Make My Magic's looking for a run, and Felvalon will have the last crack at them. Fuadi, Princess Clang and King Lotto. Make My Magic coming through. Kingsgate, look at Show of Heart. Show of Heart is coming from the tail with Felvalon. Show of Heart and Felvalon. Show of Heart, Felvalon, they hit the line. Show of Heart. Show of Heart beat Felvalon and nose in the Stradbroke. Third either Make My Magic. Kingsgate.
But for someone like myself that has heard many of those names in those races but not really been entrenched in the Stradbroke, and I really honestly don't know that much about it, but some of the names that pop up I've certainly heard before. When you look back at your horse Malala, do you have a sense of pride about what horses he beat on that day? And when you look at the honour roll now, was it something that you think you might not be able to do again, or is it like the pinnacle of any triumphs that you and your father had?
Oh, look, no doubt. He beat a horse called Prunder who only raced in Queensland, so people interstate didn't know him. He actually had one eye, and the reason he didn't go interstate because they were banned, and officials turned a blind eye, might I say, to the fact that he only had one eye. But he was a very good horse. He carried 7.5. Malala had 8.10, 55.5. Sampson finished third in that race. I think Kilsherry fourth. Kilsherry had won the Stradbroke the year before. So that was a really strong Stradbroke field. And so Malala's achievement to do it under great difficulty with leg issues was terrific. We had Winfrow win that race in 65. Castanier, Mr. Hush, when the race was delayed until the Thursday because of rain, the track was unsafe. Mr. Hush went on to be, you know, one of the great sprinters in Australia after that win under a very light weight. He walked in. Look, the Stradbroke record book, Simone, is terrific. We get to Divide and Rule. What a story he was. A three-year-old carried 56 kilos. You know, it was a terrific. It landed a huge plunge. Raja Saab won the next year with about 58 kilos. Triton won the next year with the 59 kilos. So it's been a great race.
Hey, Burnborough was more famous across the road, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Burnborough won the Doomben 10,000 Doomben Cup double in 1946. It was just remarkable. I've seen footage of that, and you just cannot believe it. There were capacity fields, and in the 10,000, he was back in the last few. The expression finishing like Burnborough was coined after that, and it still applies today. You see a horse flashing home, he's finishing like Burnborough.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? Because you'd think Eagle Farm would have been his trademark track, wouldn't you, with the way he raced?
It was an interesting story, Matt, with Burnborough. He was barred from racing in Queensland for a long period. So he did his racing if he was barred from Brisbane racing, Toowoomba was a different jurisdiction, and that's where he was trained. So he raced a lot there. Then he went to Sydney, and he came back to Brisbane after the change of ownership. And the officials relented and let him race here, but he never raced at Eagle Farm.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? A horse like that, which beggars the thought, if there wasn't a restriction with him racing in metropolitan in Brisbane, he may well have had a Stradbroke on his CV.
Oh, look, he's a horse capable of doing anything. In those Doomben wins, he carried 10 stone something. It's just remarkable. I know modern racing, it's the weight situation's different, but it was astonishing what he did. And you know, he did it in Sydney and Melbourne as well. Those 15 straight wins are just, at that time, he was the cult hero for Australia coming out of World War II. He had a massive following.
And he had a massive stride. I saw a slow-mo vision of him one day. He had a 28-foot stride. Hey, Bart, some horses can become legends of a certain race without being absolute legends in themselves. Daybreak Lover, Rough Habit, Rough Habit was probably a legend anyway, but Daybreak Lover and Black Piranha were classic examples of horses who were made famous by virtue of the fact that they were multiple winners of this race.
Yes, there's been 8 dual winners. Some of those were in the formative years of the race, but in Daybreak Lover won in 84. As a three-year-old, he went to stud the next year and didn't fire as they expected, and he was brought back to the racecourse and won again 2 years later. So that was quite a story. Rough Habit, we know. And Black Piranha was very underrated sort of horse. He started a favourite the first year. He was $21 the second year when he carried only a half kilo more. So in the interim, he didn't do a lot to incur a big weight increase. Nashua Willer actually went on in the second year, Ty England the first year. Yeah, Black Piranha was best known, no doubt, for his Stradbroke wins.
Take us through, obviously, the Chief De Beers story is the classic example of a horse that can't cross a road and win. And he was amazing at Doomben and no good at Eagle Farm. What are the differences between the two? I know one's bigger than the other, but say that the Stradbroke course at Eagle Farm, what's the nature of that course, the Stradbroke course?
Very few horses win a Stradbroke in front. I think in my time there's been only a couple. It's a high-pressure race. Eagle Farm climbs a metre every 200 metres from the 800 to the Kitchener Road in the western end of the course. So
it's a good test. It's a classic race course, like Randwick or Flemington, big roomy track. Flemington's a bit flatter, I know, but if the tempo is genuine at Eagle Farm, the back markers can flash the last 100 metres because the leaders, if they've gone hard early in the race, they'd really do tire the last bit. And you saw that in Vega 1 winning the King's Mythic a couple of weeks ago. It was just astonishing how the complexion of that race changed in the last 50 metres. And that's the hallmark of Eagle Farm. Durbin's flatter. It's a shorter straight. Chief De Beers, for some reason, just fired there. He went interstate and couldn't win. It was just his place.
Outback Barbie's another one. Doesn't go at Eagle Farm. It goes across the road.
At eight goes at Eagle Farm and hasn't run a place.
Absolutely. Hey, Barty, if you look at the geography, and this is just off the cuff of my memory, from memory, Stradbroke Island is also known as Minjerribar, and it was a large sand island that formed much of the eastern side of, from memory, Moreton Bay near Brisbane, Queensland, until the late 19th century. Today, the island is split into two islands, North Stradbroke Island and South Stradbroke Island, separated by the Jumpimamin Channel. So that's just from memory.
Just from memory, eh?
Yeah, yeah. So what came first, the Stradbroke Handicap or Stradbroke Island?
It came from Lord Stradbroke in England. So you're wrong all
round. So they named the island after Lord Stradbroke, and then they named the race after the island, and then they split the island in two. Is that historically how it happened?
Yes.
Well, Lord Stradbroke was a relative of Henry John Rouse, who was the originator of the Weight for Age scale.
How did you... Did you just Google that when I was regurgitating the history of the island, were you?
No, I didn't, but I already had it up on the page.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Expecting that you might stumble and it'll be there to pick you up.
I think, Matt, the reason you've got bags under your eyes been up all night studying the geography, if you ever get a chance to have a holiday, you go to North Stradbroke Island. It is one of the great spots in Australia.
No rap on South Stradbroke Island?
Oh, very ritzy, but North Stradbroke's your go. There's a lovely hotel there looking out over the water, and I could just see you there for... about a week.
You know, you and I have never had a steak at the Breakfast Creek Hotel?
No, we haven't, but they've got about 10 other hotels that are just as good for a steak, and they're air-conditioned.
All right.
Not in the open air. Like,
well, we were supposed to go up this year, but the COVID thing got in the way, so hopefully next year we can be sitting around having a steak, possibly on North Stradbroke Island, and doing the form on the Stradbroke. Hey, who's going to win today's race, Bartholomew?
I think Vega 1, he's a Weight for Age winner last start. You saw that dynamic finish, and he's back to 53 kilos. You have to respect that. He's good on the track. He's very good at the distance. He's had 9 goes at the distance, 4 wins. Track and distance, 4 goes for 2 wins. Just all the things are just leading me to Vega 1, but it's a great race. He needs luck. His best pattern is when he gets back. I thought he was the unlucky runner in the Stradbroke last year. He finished 4th, went back to near last from a wide draw. If he gets the breaks, I think he's the one, the Vega one.
It's funny, he was the unlucky runner in the Kingsford Smith and he still won it, so there you go.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what, that effort, Jamie Carr, that gets 11 out of 10 for bravery.
Well, I think she's the best jockey in Australia, and I didn't think I'd ever be saying that in the context of...
I don't want to stop.
Hey, all right. No, I know you'll argue. We'll argue over a steak and a pot.
I don't want you to mention the F word, the female word.
No, exactly. We all get into trouble. Hey, mate, thank you so much on behalf of Simone and Dan and myself. Thanks for taking us down memory lane, and great to reflect on your dad too with Malala and what a memory that must have been for a 13-year-old. So good on you, and good luck today out at Eagle Farm.
Thanks, Matt. I really enjoyed it, looking back at the Stradbroke, my favourite race.
Well, that was great hearing from Bart Sinclair. Gee, some of those old-timers, they really have some great stories, don't they? And Malala, back in 1963, winning the Stradbroke Handicap. Another very, very enjoyable interview. Well, history ties us into this next interview, and that is with our next guest, Chris Hislop. And Chris runs a Facebook page called Greyhound Racing Australia, History and Images. And if anyone is interested, jump onto that Facebook page, because Chris puts some terrific articles up, articles of greyhounds and trainers from times gone by and things that don't really surface these days. But he spent a lot of time, his own time, doing it. And he joins us this morning on Cracking the Codes. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Simone, Dan and Matt.
How are you? G'day, Chris. I'm just Googling your Facebook page as we speak.
Matt's a real researcher. He likes to be very, very well prepared for these interviews. But
we had a side bet. I knew that there'd have to be a photo of the monkeys on the greyhound somewhere, because that's the historical thing that has always caught my eye with greyhounds.
But I sort of retracted that, I think, just for so we didn't get criticised.
It certainly is part of the history. And we've had Terry Reid on the show a couple of times before, and he's been fascinating talking about the monkeys on the greyhounds at White City. But, Chris, tell us a little bit about your story. You started with greyhounds back in 1979 with a giveaway when you were in Adelaide and then moved to Victoria. But for someone who's not heavily involved with greyhound racing now, you certainly do a terrific job of this historical aspect.
Thank you, yeah. Look, it's a case of... I guess my life changed probably 8-9 years ago now. I had a nephew just back in Adelaide who just got involved, bought a couple of pups off us, and was killed in a one-punch incident over in Adelaide. And sort of looked at my life, and I was spending so much time doing so many things. I was a business banker. I was working 65-hour weeks. We were breeding thoroughbreds and greyhounds. And, I lost that passion for that physical part of it and looked at life in a different angle. And then I'd already started up the site, I think, about 11 years ago, and it was a case of, you know, I've loved doing what I've done. And then researching, looking back for old videos and images, they're just so hard to find. So that's when I really started to do some research, Google, Trove Australia, and generally just grew from that into capturing as much as I could of history before it was lost completely, because so much is lost now. I mean, you go back to the 80s and 90s and there's Group 1 races and that you can't get replays of, which has been a real frustration, because I do get a lot of people asking, oh, have you got this race, have you got this dog, and you go back and there's nothing, which is a tragedy. You compare that to the horse racing industry, and it's really disappointing. So
You've got 3,756 members of the group, and I've just put through... I need you to accept my request because I want to have a look at some of your photos. But there's a lovely photo on the front page of the website, of your Facebook page, where it looks like it's from about the 1920s, and there's a guy with these two greyhounds on a lead, and he's running flat chat, and he's going for a gallop with his greyhounds. What's that photo, just on that particular photo? Do you know what the history of that one is, the one I'm looking at the moment?
Yeah, that's the speed course, and they had at Plympton over in Adelaide. It's always been huge over there, but that was massive back then, and that was the slipper at the start of one of the courses. So, but it is, you're right, it's in the 1920s, 1927, 28, something like that. So, and a lot of the images, you know, you sort of come across those gems. I think that was... searching through the South Australian Library site, and I came out with those images. There's 100 or so images on there, so just capturing all those and uploading them onto the site. So, those little gems that create things, and then going on even up into last year, I started to find a lot of information online about the racing up in Harold Park. And you know, when you start to see some of the old images that I've found of the track and the crowds, and, you know, there used to be up to 30,000 people for dogs every week. It was just massive. And, you know, no one knew about it. And I guess, you know, there's things, gems have done pop up for me too. Like my grandfather, who was estranged from our family before I was born, but I knew he'd trained greyhounds up in New South Wales from Adelaide. He went up there for a couple of years and actually found an article from one of the newspapers where he trained the track record holder at Harold Park over the jumps that won by 16 lengths and smashed the track record by 14ths of a second. So it's stuff like that just comes out of the blue, and then you get people who ask you, can you find out details on the dog? And you go back and you find the history. You know, one guy in Ballarat, he knew his dad had a good dog and didn't know quite all the history of it. And it turned out his dad had won Trainer of the Year and stuff we found from old newspaper articles. So it's very interesting, and I think it's stuff we have to capture. And and give back to the industry what, you know, it gave to me, which was a lot of enjoyment over the years.
It's we've brought this up many times through the course of our show, just that nostalgic aspect, and it's all three codes. We've found that in thoroughbred racing, some of the big races and the big named horses, harness racing in particular, we did a piece on Tim Lee not that long ago. We couldn't find a race of Tim Lee's. But every now and then, like you said, you'll stumble across a gem and you feel like you have picked up a little a nugget of gold. There's a couple of avenues that we've gone down as far as, say, a YouTube is concerned. And particularly now with your website, Chris, one aspect of it is to encourage people, if they do come across, I mean, we're just talking about DVDs now, not even the old the type of VHS videos, but whatever it might be, a newspaper article, and if they do come across it, to be able to forward it on so it can and live a life where people really do appreciate this stuff.
Very true, yeah. And look, I have to praise Kyle Galley, one of the race callers. He's done a lot of work. I don't know how he's done it, but the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of videos he's uploaded onto YouTube of greyhound racing. He's also doing the trots as well, what he can find on the trots, and a few thoroughbred things as well. But just the hours of work it takes to upload stuff like that, you know, the hat's off to him. But the same, and I've spoken with Kyle, and we both saw the same thing. He was sort of doing dogs, trots, racing, and then sort of with me now, he's uploaded a lot of stuff for me. If I find gems, and we'll scour the, you know, things like eBay, Gumtree, looking for more and more stuff that we can find, and we buy out of our own pockets on a lot of occasions, just to capture it. So he's done huge amounts of stuff, as has a number of other people who are on the site and participate. And it's sort of, it's like a rolling stone that gathers. It does gather moss in this case, where, you know, you put up an article on a dog in Sydney, for example, and you've got the brilliant wordsmith Jeff Collison from there in Sydney, who quite often tells some of these fantastic stories about his experiences with different people and the stories of dogs, and, you know, just the history that these blokes put into it is fantastic. And they do it, you know, haven't asked for it, but it just happens out of their love of the game as well.
Chris, there's one type of race that has gone down in the history books now, never to be seen again, and that is the marathon. And back in 2005, in September, Sandown Park ran their last marathon. And it's things like this that I've saw marathon races and love watching them, and we just don't have them anymore. So even something as simple as this is something worth remembering. Let's take a listen.
So the racing in the marathon, Springvale Lucy about second away, and BK began smartly to lead, settling down to a card night follow then by Aussie Batloo's third. So they turn to the back straight, about a lap and three quarters left to go now. And BK takes the lead and goes to the back about six or eight clear over Card Knight. They are followed further back in the race there by Well Done Son, who's third. Four lengths away then came Aussie Battler, followed by Soxy Despard. A well back Springvale Lucy is last. About three or four lengths beyond the second and third last greyhounds here, Lansvale Fire and Rambler Boy are well back. They go past the judge, under a lap to go now in the marathon, and B-Code goes to the back about eight lengths clear over Well Done Son. They are followed further back in the race there by Card Knight, who's third, and Springvale Lucy. The favourite is really starting to hit top gear on the inside, and look at it sizzle home from here. It's still about 10 off the lead, but grabbing them in a stride, getting through Well Done Son has taken the lead. Oh, a bit of trouble there. Springvale Lucy getting through. It was jam-packed around the turn, but Springvale Lucy, a bit of bumping there. Hit the front, kicking again. Well Done Son. Springvale Lucy's won it from Well Done Son. Pretty stirring affair off the back straight, though, followed by Lansvale Fire. Further back in the race there would have been Rambler Boy, followed then by Soxy Despard and Card Knight near the rear.
Well, that was 956 metres. The race seemed to go on forever, didn't it?
But poor Chris, old Hawk had to go an extra lap.
He did.
Like a trot Chris, race.
Chris, you've got memories of the marathons at Sandown too, don't you?
Yeah, look, when we first shift over in 2001, I had a runner in the Sandown Marathon run third there, beaten a long way. But, yeah, there was a lot of interference in that race, but look, it just, there's an art to it. I know a lot of people thought it was cruel to run dogs over that distance, but, look, you know,
there's some dogs that are just built for and have the ability to be able to run those distances and not hurt themselves. And but you can understand why it doesn't happen anymore, you know, because there were occasions where people just put dogs in to have a dog in the race and, you know, they were completely unable to run the distance and stuff. So, but it was a spectacle, as was hurdle racing.
Well, and, yeah, I think the A over T factor with the hurdle racing was probably wasn't a good look, and they might have got it got rid of it. But, hey, Chris, we were talking earlier on about whether the greyhounds have evolved differently. Like, they don't run over distances that they did through the marathon races, and gallopers and greyhounds have all become more short course, and the bloodlines have opened up as well. With your historical photos and data, have you noticed any change in the general look of the modern greyhound compared to the one from a century ago?
Look, from I first started in 79, and I know there are a lot of leggy-type dogs. And, yeah, I guess the structure of the dog is more down to the sprinting aspect as it is in the thoroughbreds as well. I mean, we bred a few thoroughbreds, and I specifically bred to try and get 2 milers. Instead, I bred a thing that broke a track record up in New South Wales on a tab track. Over 800 metres, even though we better to run 2 miles. But, look, with the thoroughbreds, I guess, and the greyhounds, it's the earlier they race over the sprints, the quicker the return. I think it's been a commercial thing, to be honest, especially in the racing. You know, they want two-year-olds who earn money quick, and then for the big three-year-old classics, whereas you look in Europe and they still breed for the Dower Stayers and the Hurdlers and all that sort of thing over there. And that's why when they come over here, they outperform us generally in a lot of the staying races. But the dogs, I don't know. You go back to, I did the second last live hair coursing meeting over in Adelaide. I had a little bitch race in there. And to see that, it's strange to say, but it was like seeing nature in action. It was actually a beautiful thing. And there weren't any hairs killed or anything in those days. But again, you understand why it doesn't happen anymore. You know, just the look of it's not good. But when it comes down to the breeding, yeah, look, definitely people are breeding more for speed, in the speed. And, hence the staying races have just died out, really.
Yeah, we did have the Sandown Cup a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, the staying ranks, they do come and go, the depth of them, and we seem to have a real depth of them at some points and not at others. But Chris, it's been lovely talking to you this morning and reminiscing about some of this, and keep up the great work. We really do need to keep up this history. And I honestly don't know why we don't have a specific historian role in the industry, because I think it is well needed, and people will have plenty of things. It's just a matter of knowing what to do with them. So thank you very much for your time this morning and joining us on Cracking the Codes.
That is a pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, you're right, Simone, and thank you to Chris. All codes, Dan, as you were saying, you can't even get YouTubes of famous horses from the 1980s, and what hope do we have?
It's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah.
We have our own little libraries, and I've got a decent one here, but it's so valuable. And Chris, what he's doing, we mentioned Kyle Galley, there's a few others, a Rubicon contributor, I'm not sure who that is, but, you know, they're so valuable. Noel Ridge in the harness racing as well. We don't want to lose this. So we talk about champion animals, we want to be able to at least hear what they did, and sometimes it's so difficult.
Indeed. Well, I think you're both champion animals.
Oh, gee, thanks.
An absolute pleasure to be back with the champion animals this morning. We've come to the end of another epic edition. Simone, quickly, what are you up to today, this week?
What's on this weekend? Long weekend, isn't it?
Hello.
I've just realised.
What's all happening?
Nothing too exciting. There you go.
And Dan, La Cucaracha, an Italian Cup tonight.
That's right, yeah, a lot to look forward to. We've got to get through later on in the morning. Sandown, gee whiz, it'd be Lake Sandown today. And, yeah, a lot happening over the course of this weekend. Looking forward to it.
Good on you guys. Great to be back with you, and look forward to catching up again next week.